Welcome to the Business Vitality Podcast. My name is Catherine Canty. I am the host and an executive coach. I work with teams, individuals, and leaders to help create measured leadership change. We do that using practical application, and our clients are creating 100% measured results as seen by those around them. Not necessarily what I think or what they think, but what the other people are seeing. And they are being recognized for the hard work that they're doing. If you're interested in learning more about some of the work that we're doing, you can learn more at CatherineCanty.com. I would love for you to subscribe to this show, to Business Vitality. This is my way to continue to pay it forward and share business best practices. Stay tuned and listen to the interview. Thanks for being here.
Lisa Danels, you are the Executive Director of Human Edge, found on the web at human-edge.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Catherine. So nice to be here with you.
It's great to see you, and you're all the way across the pond, across the water.
Where are you calling in from?
All of
Switzerland, which is on the border of Germany and France. We're on this northern part of Switzerland.
What is the weather like there right now? I'm just curious.
The weather is absolutely beautiful. We've had a very early spring. It's about in the high 60s, and it's absolutely sunny. And I've had to cut my lawn twice already, just to give you a sense of how spring has already come up. My tulips are coming up in the garden. It's actually really nice.
That is awesome. I love the fact that we can jump on the computer, no matter where we are now, and we can just talk to people around the world and get to learn what they're doing. And Absolutely. It's usually very often what we're doing where we are at home. So while every experience is a little bit unique, there's a lot of similarities that we all pull from. So, and I know before we hit record, I love to be able to talk about practical applications, and you said you came ready for those, which is fantastic. Before we jump into those, do you mind talking a little bit about Human Edge and the work that the company does?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. So at Human Edge, we really like to think of it as, how do we help people transform? Right. So we know we need different leaders for tomorrow. So how can we assess and develop them in a way that opens up people's hearts? Because transformation can't happen in the head, right? Because the mental, we can't move beyond the image we have of ourselves. So we need to bring the heart energy in and the intuitive energy in order to really help people transform. So we do that through leadership development, as well as using assessment as a starting point to have deeper conversations with people.
Do you think the technology has played a huge part in the way
technology is? Yeah, technology is playing a bigger part as we move into the future, especially with AI coming on board. And AI has just exploded in the last 6 months. And one of the things we're going to be doing is and this is kind of an interesting, you talked about application, is a lot of my leaders, you know what they're saying with the virtual, because here in Europe, I know the US started shifting more to come back to in the office, but in Europe, people refuse. So what you see is people are going into the office at least 3 days a week. But when I speak to the leaders, the more senior leaders, what they say to me is, they say, you know what? When people who were been in the office, like how we learned around interpersonal skills, is we watched people who were more adept at doing it work through some very challenging and navigate situation. And the younger generations are not seeing that because they're working virtually. So one of the things we're going to be doing with technology is creating AI simulations so that you can actually talk to an avatar and practice these skills using large language models. So you're getting the skill without having to be in the office. So that's like a win-win for everybody. And we can accelerate people's performance by being able to leverage technology.
I think that's great. I think it's important to embrace where it is that we're going, but we also need to appreciate the benefit of where we came from. And being able to close that gap is really important. And it sounds like it's a win-win for the leader in the business, but it's a triple win because the people that they live with at home or in their social community are going to benefit as well, because they're going to be able to model that behavior a little bit easier than maybe somebody who hasn't had that exposure.
Yeah, and that's really the heart energy we're talking about, right? How do we show kindness? How do we respect others? How do we listen to other people's opinion, whether it's in our workspace where we're having to solve problems together, or it's in our communities? So I always say, like when I'm doing leadership development, I'll say, this is a life skill. This isn't just a skill that you can use at work. Absolutely.
I love that you said leading with kindness and leading with that caring, because it's funny because I'll post things about kindness and that's like the stuff that people want to talk about. I'm like, then this is about work, but they want to talk about just being nice.
Yeah. So let's build off of that, what you just said. Okay. Kathryn, because one of the main reasons, there were a couple of reasons of writing the book, because I think that's mm-hmm. important. The first reason of writing the book is we saw this shift of organizations going from matrixed organizations, right, to networked organizations. So because they in matrix organizations, it takes too long for the communication to go up and down. So organizations were finding that they weren't agile enough. So now they're moving to smaller, flatter organizations. And then the leader is like, well, what's my role? Right. So we wanted to answer that question of what is your role? And there was a shift between moving from a world of achievement, which is important, right? But it's achievement typically from fear that you're afraid you're something, there's some consequence if you don't achieve, to a space of co-creation. So how do we get the genius in? And leaders today, there's more information coming at us every day. There's about 74 gigabytes of information each one of us is processing every day. It equals to 16 movies. So with that, we can't know everything. So that means leaders have to trust their people more and harness that energy. So those were two big patterns we saw. But the third pattern is really that caring piece. We saw that the younger generations wanted more. They wanted what we call more humanistic leadership. They wanted their leaders to care about them, care about the problems that are facing environmental, or care about what's going on in the business. It wasn't just about making a dollar, making a euro, making a yen. They really wanted to, we want to make a difference in the businesses we're doing. And if you look at it now, right, younger generations, they have a choice. They can go build their own online business. They can be a podcaster. They could build a marketing business, right? They have so many other options where if I go back to when I started working, I didn't have all those opportunities that the people, the younger generations have now. Generation Z has more opportunities than they know what to do with. So those were the main reasons of writing the book, to help leaders define how do they come from an authentic connection, right? How do they bring out the best in other people? And then how do we co-create together and have fun?
There we go. Hey, Lisa. I took a lot of notes when you were just talking, so I want to go back and dissect, because I love to be able to kind of learn as we go through this. You talked about the two organizations, a matrix, which is not moving fast enough, which is kind of that old traditional world, which Lord knows I grew up in that organization and every single yes. bank that I ever served in, and it served me well. But you're right, it didn't move fast enough. And they were trying to like drip in agility and agile meetings and things, and God bless them, but they tried and they're still trying. So you got the matrix organization, and then you got the small flat organization. What was your terminology for the smaller,
it's
flatter?
It's called networked organizations.
Okay.
So it's smaller, flatter teams that that are typically cross-discipline, but they're really mm-hmm. either focused on a business, a customer or a business area.
How does somebody
be much more agile to the changing environment externally? That's
okay,
really,
so
really important.
How do you go from, if you've been in a matrix organization and that's all you know, and you're like, man, I can't take it anymore. And I've just read an article in Wall Street Journal this morning about people, they're just walking away from money and they're just like, this is not worth my life to be at this table. No one is happy. And this is not how I want to spend my time. And you see people moving away from that matrix. But what if you still want to work and you want to go from a matrix to a network organization? What is that transformation like for that person who only knows matrix and they want to work in a network org? And it's a big change. Like, what are some coping skills to help them?
I would say there are a couple of things. And I think there are a couple of other dynamics going on. One is people are feeling overwhelmed because the world we're living in right now is you can't just go with the left brain that we've been trained in. Our educational system was built for left brain. Left brain only processes 40 pieces of information per second, where the right brain processes 11 million. So we have to become to our places with whole brain thinking. We have to practice these skills. So I think that's one thing. Organizations that are trying to make the shift and people who are trying to make that shift, there's two things I would say that are really critical. One is this notion of growth mindset. Right? They have to get comfortable, but with being uncomfortable. They have to stretch that muscle within themselves in order to do that. The second thing I really talk about in the book is they need to step into their own personal power. So if I'm going to work in an area, in a place that's more autonomous and more empowerment, it means that I need to also not wait. I kind of call it like in the Matrix organization, you know, you have the middle managers who are sitting there like birds in a nest, baby birds waiting to be fed. And you can't wait to be fed. You have to lean in and step in. And part of that personal power is, one is believing you have agency, that you can control your destiny, you can control and shape things. The second thing is you need to have mental mastery. So what are your beliefs? I mean, look at the difference if you have a negative belief versus a positive belief. And then the third one is really being able to have this emotional piece, like how do you master your environment? How do you show up in a way that's more positive and you can express feelings? Because if people walk away, it also means, did they really take the time to share that what was really bothering them? Did they ask for it? Or do they just go, oh, forget it, I'm walking away? And I would say it's probably the latter.
Yeah, I think we see that, more and more.
Yeah, you see that. And the leaders, what the leaders are trying to grapple with, because if you think about it, and I'm sure you, Catherine, in your work, you're speaking to leaders all the time, but a leader's job is really hard now because they're being asked to do more with less, right? They have to deliver, right? With the bar is always being raised over and over again, and they're asked to be emotional. But they're also supposed to be players while they're being leaders. So and all this information is coming at them. It's overwhelming. So I think leaders are needing some space to step back to say the old way of leading, which worked really well, you know, needs to change. So we went through a phase of in the Generation X is a great example of the generation who started to make the shift to what I called shared power. And I talk about this in the book, that if we're trying to get people to co-create, I need to share power as a leader. And part of that sharing power is I need to leave space for other people to contribute. But I can't share power unless I'm secure in myself.
Mm. Right? How do we build the security? Because so many are lacking the security in their own comfort because they're still in the fear mindset. Trying to climb this ladder in a flat organization that doesn't exist, but if you keep contributing, you'll be fine. But they have that old mindset, the fixed mindset.
The fear is one of the things that's gripping us, right? So one of the first chapters I talk about is the courage to be yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So I talk about these six leaps, right? Six leaps to be yourself. And one of them, which I think is really, really prevalent that I see, is this notion of judgment. We tend to judge ourselves really, really harshly. And then when we let go of that, because when we judge, we're in the head. We can't judge from the heart space. Compassion is in the heart. So when we let go of judgment, then we have the capacity, right, to not judge other people. Because when we judge other people, it's really a reflection of ourselves. Because every relationship you have is the relationship you're having with yourself. So this is where self-awareness, you ask, what are the key ingredients? Self-awareness is right up there. And if you look at Tasha Urich's work, she talks about in her research, she wrote a great book called Insights, that only 10 to 15% of the population has self-awareness, really good self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to get to where we're, you know, we need to find that courage in ourselves if we want to step out and have our best life. Because it's easy to walk away from an organization, right? But how do you really have that courage to say, hey, I accept myself as I am? Because until you do that, there's no space. You know, another one we talked about earlier was this notion about being uncomfortable. Dare to be uncomfortable. Dare to grow. Dare to, you know, focus in on what, you know, when you're pushing up against your discomfort zone and you need to go into your stretch zone. So mm-hmm. these are some of the So these are some of the things, and also dare to care. I feel like, you know, one of the things I see right now going on in society is we're in a state of outrage, right? So our emotional capability is being deteriorated to solve problems and engage with each other in an authentic way, because we get outraged by everything on social media. And I see it on my feeds, right? And I see people are triggering people to be outraged. And I think if I'm outraged, then I can't take in information that's different than what I believe, right? And if I want to really bring in other people and organizations, I need to be willing to have cognitive dissonance and be able to hold two different thoughts at the same time that are opposing. That's a much higher level of people development that most people have. So it's very important that people are focused and being exposed to things that are contrary to their own beliefs. And we don't like that. We like to have our beliefs reaffirmed, which is why social media is making it worse, because we just constantly get the stuff that we're going to be outraged by.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a lot of questions that I could ask right now, but I'm going to pick one, because one, this topic, cognitive dissonance, it ties into the stakeholder center coaching that I'm doing with all of my clients, which is, how do you shift that old behavior mindset to how you used to be perceived, to how you want to be perceived? I would love for you to explain cognitive dissonance in your world and how you use it, because I don't think we can talk about it enough. It's so important.
It's so important, but I would even say there's a step before that, right? Because I'm a true believer that you can't move beyond the image you have of yourself. So I use this concept called identity shifting. So I'm going to work with a client. I'm going to say, let me hold the space as a coach, because this is something that is very special about coaching, as you probably know, Catherine, is I'm going to hold the space to what you want to step into, right? And then if I hold that space and I say, where do you really want to be? Then we can talk about what are the elements of cognitive dissonance that we need to explore, right? Mm-hmm. So if I see myself and I say, well, I really want to have impact in the world, well, what do I need to challenge in myself to get there, right? Because if I'm trying to help people create a space of co-creation, then I have to teach them how to do cognitive dissonance, right? I need to help them be able to say, and a lot of it, we use the concepts of improv, where you say yes and you can't do the but. So it helps people to listen more. We're not listening enough. We're not present enough. We're not listening for other people's needs. We're so like in this outrage that I have to tell you what's right. I have to make you wrong. And this is where we get into trouble, because it's not right or wrong. It's what are the needs each person is coming to the table with. Mm-hmm. So that's how I kind of approach it that way, if that's helpful. Did that answer your question?
I think it is helpful. Yes, it does. Yeah. And identity shifting and creating that goal of what the new behavior or the goal of what the organization is going to, and beginning to really visualize what it is, I think that ties into the identity shifting, beginning to see yourself in that light. Because if we're in the day to day and we're just reacting all the time, we're not going to be able to proactively plan and forecast and take ourselves.
Well,
there.
You hit a really important point, because I think this is probably one of the most important things that I use as a tool in my own life, and I have been using it, is this notion of reaction, right? So let's look at the word, right? React, right? We're reenacting something from the past, right? And it's typically an emotional reaction. So typically it's something that hasn't been resolved, versus the word response. Right. So if you say something to me that offends me, right, I'm reacting to something, which is usually something from my past. Right. Mm-hmm. I could say at the same time, Catherine, I kind of have a different point of view than you do. And what I noticed is when you said that, this is what bothered me about what you said. And what I really would like from our conversation is X, Y, and Z. So I can respond to you, right? Because I've processed my emotions in the moment rather than you getting my emotional whiplash. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't use their reactive behavior as a tool for self-awareness. I think it's one of the easiest tools. I say, become the observer of the observer. Notice your day. When did you become reactive? And then explore it. Like, what was that all about? Like, what did I need in that moment? What was unfinished? And I love playing with that because I just learned so much about myself.
I'm also curious. So that when you talk about, you know, just that foundational piece of beginning to create that movement, courage to be yourself. And step one, the foundation of it, you said, was judgment, and judgment is in our head. And that's something that I personally work on. And I'm sure, you know, if I have clients that are listening to this, they'll laugh and be like, oh, she got a lot. She needs to work on. Oh, she got more she had to her list. So judgment is definitely one of the things. How do we get out of our own head? Talk about that if you don't mind.
Yeah. So one is, I think we need to recognize when we're in our head, right? Mm-hmm. And typically what I say with clients when I work with them, because I notice that a lot of leaders go from head to heart, right? So I can be compassionate with you if you come to me with a family problem, but I tend to then can be judgmental or be in a place of judgment while I'm talking to you, maybe something about work, right? Mm-hmm. Some maybe project that we're working on. But the way I always say you can tell the difference is the voice changes when you're integrated between head and heart. And when you're in the head and you're in a place of judgment, you're talking at people, you're not talking with people. So if you notice you're talking more than they're talking to you, then you're in a place of, typically you're in a place of, I know better, I'm in a place of judgment, versus I'm saying, Catherine, so what do you, I just put this concept out, what do you think? Right. And then we're having a dialogue together. The tone of voice also changes. Like it sounds like it's coming down at you, where the talking with someone, the tone is much, much softer. And it's slower, by the way. When we're talking with somebody, there's pauses, there's time to digest. Sometimes we don't digest enough what people say.
Okay. What you just said was uber powerful. I want to reiterate it, make sure I capture this. So if we're going to go to have courage to be ourselves, that first part is acknowledging the judgment that happens in our heart. I mean, happens in our head. In our head. And so that judgment, you see leaders move from the head to the heart. They'll bounce back and forth. Correct. And what you're sharing is, we can notice this happening in a meeting because the voice changes when people talk at people and when people are talking with people.
With people. And even a good thing.
Oh my goodness. Do you know how many meetings I sit at and people just talk at people all the time and use way too many words?
And what happens? People start to go on their phone. They start to do something else. They start to disconnect. Because nobody wants to be talked at. They want to be engaged in the process. The other thing that's good if you want to play with clients is typically I find when you ask them a challenging question and there's an emotional barrier, then they go into their head. So I'll just say to my clients, drop into your heart, and then everything changes. There's insights that come. There's beautiful emotions that get expressed. So we need to become, and one of the big concepts in the book is this integration of head, heart, and gut. Because if we can access all three of those qualities or energies, if you want to call them, in any moment, then we have the greatest capacity to guide ourselves through life.
This is what's missing, is what I see missing, is trusting our gut, myself included. Mm-hmm. We just get into react mode day to day. And then when I reflect on it, I'm like, well, my gut told me I should have done X, Y, Z, but I still did whatever that first thing was. Mm-hmm. Talk about that and how hard it is. And I feel like we've lost the connection. So I'm sure you have much better research and insights than my gut feeling of, I think we lost our connection with our gut.
I think you're absolutely right. We have lost our connection. And I'll share as for the parents out there, one of the ways that why kids lose their connection to their gut. So what happens is that we as parents try to protect our children. Right. So when we're upset about something and we come home from work or from some event, right, and our child comes up to us and says, Mommy, I sense you're really angry. And mommy says, I'm not angry. Right. Mm-hmm. So then the mother denies the feelings. The child is left in confusion because they pick up everything as children. They're very much in their intuitive space. And then the children says, well, mommy's always right. So I have to be wrong. And then they stop listening. So I think we have to be careful about how we even encourage our children and raise our children to understand that connection and when the disconnection happens. But you're absolutely right. A lot of people, or it's intermittent. right? They're not fully listening, or they don't. It's a muscle. You have to strengthen it. But there's three areas of gut that I think are important to explore, right? The first area of gut that comes up, or intuition, is this sense of all of the information. We have photographic memories, and everything you've ever been exposed to in your life, your right brain has taken in. And that means that because it's processing 11 million pieces of information per second, that if you go to solve a problem, which is if you just ask an open-ended question, the right brain, you activate the right brain. So it can start to bring in everything that you've already been exposed to in your life. Everything. And let me give you an example. I was working with a team that was really challenging. And I was sitting in my office after I did the diagnostic, and I didn't know what to do. So I said, okay, let me just step away from my desk. I came back from my desk, and an insight said, go look at the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. So I went and looked at the book. It was exactly what I needed. I had never studied it in depth. I had been slightly exposed to it, but my intuition told me that was the answer to my question. Mm-hmm. So that's the exposure to stuff. Then the next one is, we have this, what we call this sense of where danger is. So think about 9/11. How many people didn't get on a plane, didn't go to work, right? We have this sense of, we know danger is looming, and somehow our intuition is telling us, right? That's the second one. The third one has to do with, and this is one of my favorite ones, is this notion that we're all really connected, that we're all in this place of unity. And because of that, we have the ability to tap into what I call universal intelligence. And because we're tapped into universal intelligence, it means we can download anything from the universe if we allow it to come in. So those are the three areas of intuition that I have found through the work that I've done and the research I've done.
And that's in your book as well.
Say it again.
Is that in your book as well?
It is in my book. There's a whole chapter dedicated to intuition.
How much research, how many years of research have you put into this book that you've created?
Oh, well, that's hard because it's been work that has been bubbling up probably for like 14 or 15 years. So it was pieces of work that I played with, and I like the personal power, something, the personal power element has been something I've been working on for 10 years. I've been coaching since 2003. So there's a lot of experiences that come through, as you know, through the coaching process, mm-hmm. working with clients. We grow and we learn with our clients. So it's years of practitioner experience, as well as, really framing. I think one of the things I talk about the book, which is really important, is you have to frame the problem. So when my team came together to talk about like, what is going on in leadership development, we really started to frame the problem of this shift to networked organizations, the shift to people want more empathy. So that's how it emerged. And then we created the frame and then found the research.
How do you, I'm curious, because we see organizations getting flatter, mm-hmm. and we want to retain these really high performing people, mm-hmm. but we grew up with parents that lived in a matrix organization where there were promotions and, you know, mm-hmm. the ladder, et cetera. How do you keep high performers engaged within a small, flat mm-hmm. organization when they're high performing and they want a promotion every 6 months?
Yeah. So one of the really good things, if you're a leader, is to ask people is what do they hope to gain? Because it's typically not the promotion. It's typically the recognition. You know, the earlier, like the millennials and the Zs, they're looking for building capability and making a difference. So we have to look at what are the needs of that generation? Because if we put our belief on about working hard, you have to earn it, right? Then that's where we're going to make the wrong turn. So what's really good is to help understand what is it people are looking for. And typically you can meet those needs through conversation.
This is funny because I was working with a high performer and this leader just adamant, like, I need this promotion. And I just finally said, why? Yeah. Why do you need it? Do you need a paycheck? What do you need? And they're like, I don't know. But like the whole engagement shifted, but it took some time. Like it took a couple months of just saying, why do you think it's that important?
What do you hope to gain? Yeah. The why is a tricky question because why is always a little bit too psychological. So it's really good to ask what and how questions. So what do you hope to gain by getting the promotion? Then I really understand what's behind it.
So this is a practical application that any manager can go use.
Anyone can use
it. Do you hope to gain? I'm going to write this down.
What do you hope to gain?
Yeah. What was your other question?
Just because the key thing is when we look at needs, right? We have we have needs, and when those needs are not met, then we have negative emotions that occur, right? So if somebody is displaying negative emotion, there's a need that hasn't been met. So if you, in the book, I take the work from Nonviolent Communication, because I think his work is brilliant. And in the back of my book, you see the list of needs and feeling words. So what happens? So for example, if we look at needs, we have the need to connect. We have the need for physical well-being, the need for honesty, play, peace, autonomy, and meaning. Those are the basic needs that we all have. And underneath, obviously, there's different elements. So if we can tap into what are the needs, then we can help people explore what that looks like. Can I give you an example from when I was a really early manager when I worked at American Express? So I had this woman on my team who was a project manager, right? And I could sense that she wasn't fully engaged. So I said to her, Shirley, what is it that you really want to do in your life? So I tapped into the purpose thing. So she says, you really want to know? And I said, yeah, I really want to know. So she says, to be honest, I want to have my own hairdressing salon. She's like, I've been working at night to go to beauty school and to take care of that, but I really want my salon. And I said, okay. I said, so what are the skills do you think is needed to have your own salon? So she's like, well, I'm definitely going to have to manage finances and understand budgeting. I said, so why don't you take on the department budget so you can learn how to do those? She was over the moon. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we need to make connections that we think like, oh, how could she serve the business? Right. But there's always this win-win between serving the employee and serving the business, because I still needed someone to manage the budget.
Yeah.
And she had an opportunity of growing and learning and doing it. So I think they're real. It's really getting into this needs. And a lot of the times in organizations where there's a rub is because nobody comes out and says, I need this. Right. It's always under the surface. So we need to really listen for people's hopes, fears, and dreams. And what those needs are that are underneath that.
Okay, you've shared a lot of information. When you were pulling all this together for the past 14, 15 plus years, something that you haven't shared so far, what is like something that you have found really insightful or impactful for you that maybe we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that was a huge aha for me when I did the research for the book is when we talk about authentically connecting in collaboration, one of the elements, obviously, trust comes to the top of the list. So as I was doing the research on trust, two things really hit me that really was like a really surprising. But it made a lot of sense in the end, and I'll explain what it is. So the first one was that the trust that we have forms really in the first 18 months of life. So if our basic needs are not met, then we really have trust issues later on, right? And from those lack of trust issues, 50% of the population does not have healthy attachment, right? So that means that when you see people reacting in the workplace, it's because they don't have healthy attachment. So then I had this like aha moment while I was writing the book, because I used to do my writing on Sunday. And one of the things I was just thinking about is like, you know, we're so easy to judge people in the organization. So easy to judge people. And then I thought, wow, what if I had a little bit more compassion for them? Because I know that they had a little bit of a rough childhood and they didn't get their full needs met. So what if I look at it as like, if I understand it better, could I find a space to help them more? That was massive for me, because I didn't realize how many people are really struggling with the journey. That was a huge, like, just opened up my heart. And you know, because it's so easy to judge. Oh, look at that person. Look what they're doing. You know, it's so easy. The second thing that was quite, again, related to the trust is around in organizations, we tend not to repair trust. So if somebody... I'm working on a project and maybe someone doesn't deliver or somebody goes behind my back. It happens in organizations, right? If it happens in a family, like if you're living with your kids or your husband, right? Or your mother is in close proximity, we tend to repair trust when it gets damaged because it's too uncomfortable to be in a space where trust is damaged, So we'll work on repairing it. But in the workplace, very few, when I was started to ask questions about how often repair happens, I found that repair doesn't happen that often, that we tend to avoid that person or move around them. And we never go and say, this activity or this, what happened really bothered me. Can we talk about how to rebuild the trust? So we have to, one is be willing to rebuild the trust. We need to share. And then we need to be willing to forgive other people, because people, the intent and impact are two different things. And a lot of times people in organizations, their intent was one thing, but their impact was something else. And if they don't get feedback, they also can't change. Mm-hmm. So that was a massive, that was really big for me, that those two things in organizations really need to happen.
Intent versus impact. My goodness, we see this every day. We all have this intention, myself included, this great intention, and then this impact comes across and I'm like, whoa, that was not what my intention was. And you're right. It's just easier at the end of the day to go home and not deal with it and hope that it's going to be gone tomorrow, but it's not.
Yeah. Or we just avoid it, or we minimize it and we just say, well, I'm not going to really fully trust that person anymore, or I'll work around them, or you don't fully engage anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't fully, and this happens all the time in Oregon. I mean, just ask some of your clients, how have you repaired trust in the workplace? And they'll be like, hasn't happened that much. I mean, it happens, but it's rare. Yeah. And I think we need to really see each other as more human. I think during COVID really helped from this perspective, because remember, like, during COVID, when everyone was at home and their world was in their work as well as mm-hmm. their home, and all of a sudden you had the dog run by, the child run by, right? And people mm-hmm. in the past would have been like, oh, that's so unprofessional. And now, because mm-hmm. everyone was in the same boat, everyone went, it happens. And yep. we laugh at it now. We're more yep. compassionate about, you know, that life happens.
So what's the long-term benefit of all of this shifting of us moving from the fix to the growth, from us moving to repairing trust in the organization, from us moving from judgment into compassion? I imagine you measured some benefits.
Yeah. So the big benefit is that when that happens, people are really willing to show up, and it creates psychological safety. And we know when psychological safety is there and we leave a space for co-creation, we can solve some of the really complex problems that are facing organizations, because governments are really not solving some of the big problems anymore. So organizations are finding that they're trying to deal with some of the bigger problems in the environment, like sustainability. How do we make products that are not destroying the environment? So some of these challenges businesses have are really huge. Like a good one during COVID, what a lot of our clients struggled with, is this notion of, you know, how do we reduce energy costs, because our production costs are going through the roof, right? So people had to get really creative on how to solve that problem in a different way. Otherwise, they couldn't pass all the costs onto their clients. So this is where the co-creation process happens, because I used to think it was like everybody brought a piece of the puzzle, right? And that piece made the puzzle. But actually, my thinking has evolved by doing the process, which is really about, I bring, there's a concept I call in the book, which is bring a brick and not a cathedral, right? So if I bring something into the room and say, here's my recommendation, right? I can't really change much in the cathedral. I can maybe change the color of the windows or maybe the shape of the door, but the structure is there. Versus if I bring a brick and then you bring a brick and somebody else brings a brick, I don't know what's going to be built. So it's not just a piece of the puzzle. It's like magic starts to happen.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. And I think that's what is, there'll be problem solved faster and more at ease when we can really learn how to co-create. And leaders, in order to do that, they really need to create a frame. Because a lot of the times they're like, oh, people come with ideas that are not relevant, or they're so far off track. And I'm like, did you create a frame? Do they know where they can play and where they can't play? Oh, no, I haven't done that. Well, then you don't allow people, you have to let people create within a frame, an opportunity, and, you know, something that they need to solve for.
I love it. Bring a brick, not a cathedral.
Yeah.
I was with a group of professional women earlier this week. They're creating this women empowerment group time to come together and collaborate, co-create. And everybody brought a brick. And because everybody brought a brick to the dinner, we were able to build something much bigger and more impactful than if one person came and said, this is what we're going to do. And it was so cool to see the brains come together. Everybody's so excited.
Yeah. Well, you hit, there's two things. One is you built something bigger than you ever thought possible. And the excitement is there, right? It builds energy. It builds engagement. So you hit the nail on the head. I'm so glad you had that experience because I don't think enough people have had that magical experience.
It's really cool. I can't highly recommend it enough. It's where the magic happens. So tell me, where do people get to learn more about you? Where do they find the book? I don't know if you want to flash the book up or not.
Yeah, sure. It's
an incredible resource.
In the US, you can find the book on Amazon.com as well as BarnesandNoble.com. So you can find it there. You can find me on the human-edge.com website, as well as my lisadanels.com. You can find me on the website as well. Also, you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, all of those places. If you just put my name in, you'll find me pop up.
This is fantastic.
And we're constantly putting out new content, new videos. So definitely visit my personal website, because all the podcasts that I do, they're all up there, and there's always something intriguing to learn and to grow.
That is awesome. Lisa Danels, you're the executive director of Human Edge, found on the web at human-edge.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you like it, please subscribe, share this episode or this show with other people around you. The greatest form of a compliment is a referral. I really appreciate them. And if you think that you want to learn more about some of the work we're doing, I encourage you to reach out to CatherineCanty.com. You can schedule a call or just continue to read articles and information that we post out there. Thank you so much for being here.